coming to you live from aboard a Nantucket sleigh ride. I'm Johanna Stauffer, and with me, as always, are a bunch of dudes who do not appreciate jingle bells. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 810, My Porcupine is Obese. Lives on a ranch at the end of a winding gravel driveway. You can't drive all the way because, well, we'll get to why. But you have to park on the roadside and walk the rest of the way up. It's windy and cold, and there's a lot of open ground, making it ideal for what Cuddle does.
Yeah, I reckon we're the only ones doing it in America, raising up these here animals. A couple of guys in Italy, a couple in South America, Brazil, I think. But only us in the United States.
Cuddle's a big man with a thick black mustache and hands that make you think of a Swedish masseuse. He's got on cowboy boots and a cowboy hat, and he wears a revolver on his belt. He says it's for killing rattlesnakes. I ask him what it is that he raises.
Cuddle Farms is a papal bull ranch. We've been raising 100% purebred papal bulls for going on 3 generations.
And what is a papal bull?
Well, the Pope uses a special kind of cattle when he makes a proclamation. He doesn't use them all the time, but I'm not exactly clear on the whens and the whys of bull or no bull. But when he does, well, there's a good chance he uses one of mine.
Do they sacrifice the bulls?
oh, no.
Because, and I'm no expert, but I think there's a part in the Bible about that.
You are correct, sir. No, he just writes the proclamation on the side of the bull and puts it out to pasture, and that's about it. He writes it on paper, too, because you gotta do that or you won't have it when the bull passes on, but it's got to be on the bull first.
Buddy takes me over to a pen where a few of the bulls are standing. He says he's brought these ones in from the pasture for a medical checkup, and also because he gets bored and moves the bulls around sometimes. The bulls are big and muscular, with sleek horns and rings in their noses, and their coats are all pure white.
Well, yeah, that's important, because there's not any not white hair. It means they can't ride on that part of the bull, and they don't want that. The Vatican is very particular about it.
So how many do you have?
All right, now we got about 85, 86 bull on the ranch, and that's about average.
How many cows does it take to keep that kind of herd going?
Pardon?
You know, to breed enough bulls to keep you going.
Oh, no cows here. All of our bulls are purely celibate.
What?
Well, they're Catholic bulls, you see, for ecclesiastic purposes. Gotta be celibate.
But...
Yep.
As I walk away from Buddy Cuddle's ranch, I can't help but think about those bulls and how they'll have proclamations written on their sides. It doesn't seem like such a bad life to me, but... Not everybody thinks that way.
Buddy Cuddle's Ranch is a cruel and inhumane operation. It is monstrous.
That's Simon Pooch, an attorney with the No Bull Project.
And I've dedicated my life to shutting down Buddy Cuddle's Papal Bull Ranch.
I caught up with Simon at the end of Buddy's driveway, which is where he lives in a tent. Like Buddy, he's a big man, but instead of a cowboy hat, he wears a fez, and instead of a pistol at his belt, he carries a briefcase. He wouldn't show me what was in it.
The practice of papal bullying is equally cruel. We should not force these innocent creatures to participate in these ceremonies. It is wrong. Morally, legally, and philosophically wrong.
How is it cruel? Don't they just paint a proclamation on the bull and then put it out to pasture? Is the paint toxic?
No, the paint is water soluble and rarely makes it a full day. The point is that the bulls are not Catholic.
What?
Everybody knows that bulls are Protestants. Forcing them to participate in Catholic rites like this is a violation of freedom of religion.
How do you know the bulls are Protestants?
I speak bull.
As I walked away from Simon's tent, I reflected on the long traditions at play. One, the Catholic Church, had a man in Arizona raising pure white bulls. Another, the law, had a man camping in a tent trying to stop him. And a third, whatever it is that I do, had me recording all of it for posterity and sending it out over the airwaves. So I leave it up to you to decide. In the grand scheme of Catholic or Protestant, boxers or briefs, sausage or taco, does any of it matter? Or is it really all just bull? For WKKK in New Germantshire, man, we've really got to change that call sign. I'm Lee Razzlefoos, and you're listening to This Tasmanian Life on National Poo-Block's Roodledoo.
Hello, discerning news listener. Do you ever have trouble understanding which words are the newscasters and which words he or she, but let's be honest, he, are just quoting? You can tell on a book because they put those little curly lines around them, and you can tell on the TV because they hold up their hands and make their fingers do crunches. But on the radio, no luck. Until now. Hi, I'm Jeremy Thalbodian, inventor of ear quotes, the revolutionary new technology that allows you to clearly mark quotations in audio-only media. With ear quotes, you don't need to wonder if it was the newscaster or the circus clown who said, "Yes, I hunted those children with a crossbow." But don't take my word for it. Listen to this sentence presented without ear quotes technology.
According to an aide, the problem was that 13 tons of hot Yeti pee spilled on the senator's lap.
Which part is the quote? Which part is the newscaster? There's no way to tell. Let's hear the same sentence, but this time with ear quotes.
According to an aide, the problem was that 13 tons of hot Yeti pee spilled on the senator's lap.
I think the results speak for themselves. Get ear quotes installed on your device today.
Ear quotes does not work with Android, iPhone, Windows phones, or other mobile devices. May not work with any other devices that you own. May actually be an 800-pound silverback gorilla. Ear quotes is a wholly owned subsidiary of Ear Quotes Incorporated, equal housing lender, all 50 states, member FDIC, NMLS number 8675309. Welcome back to the Mustachioed Llama Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And we're really glad to have you here on this here in the second half of the show. But like what I was saying to you before the show came back from the break, Johannes.
That's my name.
Just a lot.
Don't wear it out.
The problem we ran into, you know, you've got a good point in that I wouldn't have this issue if I cleaned up my gutters more often.
Right.
But it's condensed milk.
Like sweetened condensed milk.
Sweetened condensed milk. Nothing about my home is designed to withstand a 3-hour torrential downpour of that stuff. It's just different from water. So like the gutters being clean would have been better, but still you're not looking at a good situation.
You're gonna have a bad time.
Yeah
plus the shallow rake of your roof.
Yes.
And yeah.
It's just not gonna work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of ants and just a lot of rodents. And like cats are all over the
place.
True.
Cats love that stuff. Yeah. But then they throw up. So
but you know they also love all the rats that are coming.
Oh yeah, fair
too.
Enough.
And there's a kid from over the fence, and I don't know what he's doing, but he's just lapping.
Just
lapping
it up. Scooping fistfuls of sweetened condensed milk and leaves and tar and whatever came off your roofing.
Yeah, and like there's no shingles left. They are gone.
Oh, they're gone.
It's bare plywood.
Well, it saves you scraping them off before your landlord replaces them.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen. That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So like what I'm thinking right now.
I have like maybe 2 packs of shingles left from when we did my roof.
That might have been enough to do my whole roof.
No.
Not a very big house.
Not at all.
Not even close.
If you want to do like maybe 8 square feet of your roof, maybe.
What I figure I'm going to do is because I was able to get a lot of newspaper cheap from an undisclosed source.
Sure.
And what I'm thinking I'm going to do is I'm going to cut it up
into shingle-sized piles.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to pee on it.
Okay, and, you've lost me there, but...
And I'm going to press... Like, I'm going to stack it up real thick,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and I'm going to pee on it, and
sure.
then I'm going to press it between some bricks.
Yeah.
So it real gets real compact. I'm going to do this for a couple of weeks, and that's going to make shingle.
Why pee?
Because it's the minerals in the pee that get into the paper and bind it better than other substances.
Did you learn about this on the internet?
I was reading
You just made it up.
I was reading about prisons.
You just thought pee has minerals,
well,
right?
No, I was reading about prisons, and that's what they'll do to make a shiv.
That's how they roof prisons?
You pee on the paper, and you compress it, and then it gets like brick-like, and then you just rub it on a brick wall, and that sharpens it into a knife, and then you kill somebody with it.
Okay.
But in my case, I'm going to make shingles and re-roof my house with them.
Uh-huh. Okay.
With urine and newspaper.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
That's the plan.
I don't see any problems with this course of action.
There's no issue whatsoever, really.
Nothing could go wrong.
I can't think of anything.
Which is why... Well, I was going to pitch a theme to you, but we haven't even introduced it. Segment.
Oh, yeah, we're so theme balling. That's what the segment is.
I was going to say, which is why my theme for you is roofing, which is not true.
That's it should be. It could be.
That could
I'd
be.
Go with that one.
Should be. Could be.
But we're theme balling now.
Would be. Did be.
Put the music here.
This theme of balls. A theme of balls.
A theme of bomb, 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 bomb. Sean Bean still dies. Spoiler alert.
He always dies. He dies. If you see Sean Bean in a thing... You know he dies.
It's true.
And if he doesn't,
you die.
But this segment is called Theme Ballin'.
Is that enough time?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, good.
If I were better at operating this computational device, I might know how to extend the time of silence that we had between, but as it stands, we need to be quiet for exactly the amount of time that the music plays, or it's just never going to work.
Right. It's nonsense.
I'm real bad at this.
Yeah.
Plus, we're using tape.
Not like recording tape, we're using duct.
Duct, yeah, like not even scotch tape. You can't see through it. It's just the worst.
It's just there, it's just dark. And we each have a pen knife, and
yep.
we're scratching,
we're just scraping
the waveform. Is that the word I want?
Yeah,
into it, so that when you run it through a duct tape player, it'll make the sounds, and that's how you get podcasts.
Yeah, we had to get one of those old timey cylindrical audio. This is like a precursor to a record player. They played like wax cylinders.
Right.
And then we had to replace the stylus on that with, a larger, heartier stylus that Tom made out of newspaper and pee.
I'm good at making things out of newspaper and pee.
To play.
It's a gift.
From the duct tape.
I'm a gift.
So that's how we produce this podcast. And yeah, if you have any better ideas...
Please let us know.
We'll tell you at the end of the segment how to contact us.
We're
going
to give you the contact info now. That's the end of the segment right there. Yeah. We talk about newspaper P, introduce this overall segment,
and then
but
never
don't
do it.
Do it.
That's the end.
It's par for the course.
People were like, oh my God, I thought it was over, and I was so glad, but they're still talking.
Oh, Solomon would be.
Solomon, like the historical biblical king, or?
Or the guy, it's the same guy.
Or Salmon Grundy, is that a thing? No. I think that's a comic book thing
Solomon Grundy. Well, it's a character in Batman. He's a Batman villain, but it's also a character from an old-timey poem.
Uh-huh. You know, poem has two syllables.
Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday.
Those words don't rhyme unless you're one guy that I work with.
Married on Tuesday.
And if you're going to stick with
Wednesday.
The rhyme scheme of the poem, it's Tuesday.
Tuesday. Something on Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Died on a Thursday, buried
Thursday.
On Friday.
Thursday, come on, man.
This is the life of Solomon Grundy. It goes something like that.
If his name isn't Grundy.
Look, dude, I'm not old English. I don't know how this works.
Old English.
Oh, my cripes. I'm going to
So, would you like to have your theme balled to you first, or would you like first to ball your theme?
I can ball a theme to you first.
Okay.
What was my theme? Shoot. No, I had it just a moment ago.
Well, I have two for you.
Okay, go ahead.
So we're going to try this a little different. I'm gonna pitch you the two, and you can pick the one you like better.
Okay.
The first is whales.
Mm-hmm.
The second is a newspaper. Just like running a newspaper.
I like the second one better. Okay. I'm gonna run with
it. Take it away.
So if I were going to make a newspaper running, I'm like, the temptation is to go like hard Euro with it, where there are stories and you've got to like manipulate the money to buy the reporters and blah, 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 blah. It's boring. I think I would go like yellow journalism with it, so that the goal is not to run the most profitable paper or to run the most accurate paper.
Or to run the most paper. I'm going to cut that out.
Sure. But the goal is rather to run the paper that pushes the secret agenda you have best. So it would need a method, like a system of cards, I would think, to control like the overall events in the world. Like, is the country you're in pushing toward war with fake Spain or fake France or whatever? Or
Spain and France.
Yeah. And then
I don't know where the P came from in France.
Whatever.
Maybe, wait, hold on. Maybe France is already fake and it used to be called Sprance.
Are you drunk? Is that what's going on here tonight?
Oddly, no.
Okay, fair enough. So you've got that. You each player has a paper and you're competing for readership because you have to maintain a certain level of readership or your paper collapses and you lose.
Uh-huh.
So the game will need to be quick enough that elimination works. And then you're trying to push people to believe your story. So what I think I would do is I would have a pile ton of tokens in the middle representing readers, right?
Okay.
And you could move, and they would start out with a random mix of how they believe, and that would be one face of the token is what they believe, which story they believe is most accurate.
You can't say mix, that's racist against the Irish.
For God's sake, we need to move along. So you've got a bunch of these in the middle, and as you play, do advertising and whatnot, you can move them into reading your paper, so you move them from the middle into your area of the board.
Okay.
And then by playing certain cards from your deck, it's a deck builder now,
uh-huh,
you are able to flip tokens that are reading your paper and replace them with other tokens that you have access to from some means. And so you're trying to replace the people who read your paper's tokens that don't believe your story with ones that do believe your story.
Okay.
Then at the end of the round, you push all of your tokens back into the middle, so into the general populace. Everybody does.
Uh-huh.
And you scramby them all up.
Uh-huh.
And then you try to do it again. But maybe there's some things that get you like loyalty, so you get to keep people who read your paper in your area. Does that make sense?
No, because what do those tokens do when you have them? If they all just go back into the middle at the end of your turn or the end of the round, what did they do for you when you had them?
Well, you had access to them because they were reading your paper to try to change their minds and get them believing your story.
Yeah, but what did that do for you?
Well, at the end of the game, the more people who bought your story, the winner you are. So you
okay, putting aside your bizarre use of the word winner just there, how is that scored? Do you score at the end of each round?
Let me run it through. So at the beginning of the game, there's a bunch of tokens in the middle representing the populace, and they're random. So some believe one story, some believe another, whatever. Each round, you use advertising and muckraking and whatnot, and whatever techniques you have to try to get them to read your paper.
Uh-huh.
And you scoop those into your area.
Okay.
Then you're able to, by writing persuasive articles, having good reporters, whatever the case may be, convince some of those readers to swap their loyalty by switching their token out. So you get to look at a token and say, this guy believed Gary's story. I'm going to trade him for one who believes mine. And now that reader believes your story instead.
Right. And you're moving them during that round into your own play area where your tokens are. Okay.
So then at the end of the round, you get to keep maybe some if you've earned enough loyalty by being that kind of paper. But you push the rest back into the middle and scramble them up with the other players.
Uh-huh.
And then you play more rounds, however many it winds up being.
Uh-huh.
Then at the end of the game, once you've all had your chance, you flip the tokens over, count up how much of the population believed each story, and the winner is the one who got the most people to buy it, buy their crap they were slinging.
So the ones you what are you counting? The ones that you kept or the ones that are left in the middle?
The ones overall in the total population.
But you have not shown a way to remove any tokens from the game.
Sure you have. No, so when I pull somebody back into my air, my play area,
yeah.
a token, if I change his mind, so I flip him over, I look at him, I say, okay, he believes Gary's story.
Uh-huh.
I then, if I change his, if I'm able to change his mind, I have 1 point to do that or whatever.
Oh, you're swapping them from tokens in the box?
In the box or in the...
That was not clear.
Sorry, my mistake. Yeah. You make that swap so that you have now, in the overall mix, one more guy who believes what you're selling.
Okay. All right. I can kind of see that.
And there might be abilities like to criticize other papers and give penalties to their ability to convince people.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of stuff. And so by keeping people in your play area between rounds, you protect them from reading other people's papers.
And changing their minds.
And having their minds right. changed, yeah.
I like where you're going. I think it's good. I think this may be too granular. No, that's not the word I want.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe too nitty-gritty.
Sure.
But I like what you're doing. I think the better approach to design on this game would be to focus on one of those things,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's just have the most readers or advertise well, like whatever it is, and make sure the core mechanic works well, and then put the, like, because people who believe your story versus people who subscribe to your paper are two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need to choose one of those as your core mechanic and then have one or two others be bonus point, kind of like, it's great, like, really, as a newspaper operator, I want people to buy my paper because I'm trying to make money. Or as a journalist, I want people to believe my story, mm-hmm. even if they choose to send their dollars elsewhere. And you might even have different papers that have different, or you might even just have the game be open enough that different players could choose different strategies to mm-hmm. try to do that. But so I'm not, I guess it could just be that your description is broad enough that you haven't done this, or it could be the thing I'm saying. Anyway, make sure that one works and then yeah. add the others on top rather than trying to do all of them at once, because it's confusing. It's difficult to design and it's confusing to teach.
Sure.
If you have to do all of it at once.
Mm-hmm.
But I like what you're doing. I don't know how I would feel about the game in play. I guess as a deck builder, I personally would probably end up enjoying it because there's generally not a whole lot of deliberately screw you mechanics, mm-hmm. right? It's more work with the tokens that I've pulled in. So yeah, I think y'all like where you're going with it. I think we could actually make that work. I like the tokens and cards, like tokens plus deck builder thing. Mm-hmm. You don't often see that, or at least you don't often see that with a lot of different tokens. Mm-hmm. With the token scramble, you see it with, you know, tokens are worth victory points and they're just a tracking thing. But when it's more of a...
I like token scrambles.
Yeah.
And I like flipping tokens.
The play area will be a little difficult to work with because you'll have to have a place to, like, a market for cards, you mm-hmm. know, to build your deck out of, in addition to a token scramble area. So your play area will be a little hectic, but I like it in concept.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I just had another thought that I don't know how you integrate it, but you know what would be cool? Because one of the big things in journalism is getting the scoop, you know, being the first to a story.
Yeah.
What if each round, the stories that you have available to play on
mm-hmm.
are drawn from a deck, and there's one per player, or maybe one per player plus one or whatever, and they're
yeah.
and you draft them.
Oh.
So you get them first on a given round, or there's some mechanic to indicate who gets access to that hand of them first.
Uh-huh.
And you... Like, if you get it, you can draft the one you want. You can get the scoop on that story.
I feel like it's a little too complex, and I may just be misunderstanding what you're mm-hmm. saying. What if your scoops, your stories deck is just shuffled? It's random, and each new round is a new story, and you're all competing for the same story, but either special abilities of your particular newspaper
mm-hmm.
or things that you can pull into your deck, so the actions that you can play later allow you to do a number of things, like change the big scoop. Like, you know, there's a big scoop everyone's been working on, but you can flip the next one mm-hmm. to change the scoops. And there's another bigger story. People working on the old one get some points, but it's not the biggest story anymore
because
a new one just broke. Some will let you look at it. So like some people kind of have sort of insider trading-y kind of information about a story that's coming up, but not everyone knows. So you can prep for it.
Wonder if you could do it with like different threads that run through the scoop, the story deck. So there's like a labor story that develops and a corruption in City Hall story that develops. And as you draw cards, they match up in different ways onto that.
Oh, that's pretty complex too. Like could get very complex because you could say whether it's inherent to a given newspaper company or it's just inherent to a given player style, you could say, well, I've decided that my news source is going to try to appeal to the common man and the blue-collar worker. So the labor story is more interesting to a segment of the population than the, you know, Wall Street trading, like, upper crust kind of, the 1% part appeals to a different part of the population. If it's literally the 1%, that's clearly not the strong play for readership.
Probably not, no.
Maybe for money. Who knows? I like it. It seems like it could very quickly get way too complex to play.
Oh, yeah. It could balloon out very rapidly. But it hits on a couple of interesting things we've talked about before in other theme balling episodes, like having tokens that represent people. We've done that before. Mm-hmm. And having them represent multiple intersecting like values or areas of importance for those people. And you're trying to draw them in, but you also don't have all of the information. We talked about it with the electoral politics theme balling, where the front of the token represents the absolute value of that person, but you've got a little information based on the back of it.
Right.
But not enough to really make a final call about what you should do, but you have to make it anyway because that's how the world is. It's a dark nightmare.
Yeah.
I'd play it.
Anything that shows that the world is a dark nightmare, I think, is a...
Really, that's what board games are about, is demonstrating...
The darkness of the nightmare.
That we live in... We should live in fear at all times, and we should all just be underneath that dumpster with that possum.
Yeah, except he's dead, so it'll smell real bad.
Yep. And that is our world, a dumpster and a dead possum.
Well, it's my fault for all the talking, but we have very little time left for you to give me a theme.
You want to get a ball themed back to you?
Do it.
It didn't come back to me. Crap.
Well, Tom thinks I would like to point out ahead of time that this, I think, of all of the theme balling segments, will probably demonstrate best how I'm much better at working on someone else's original idea than I am at generating my own. You've probably picked up on that already, but...
For those discerning readers who have been paying attention to the running themes throughout the show.
We'll see how bad this goes. How badly this goes.
Right.
Poorly. Whatever. Words.
Let's see here. Let's go with, for theme number one, cross-country transit.
Okay.
So ocean to ocean. That's kind of how I would put that.
All right.
And for theme number two, space prison.
So you picked that one because you just wanted me to do space prison.
No, I panicked. I didn't really have much. The brain didn't work.
Yeah, like I'm doing space prison. I have no ideas for it. But cross-country transit, like you said that, and I immediately pictured the board from Ticket to Ride. Uh-huh. And I died a little bit inside.
Yeah, I was hoping you would go somewhere like angry with it. Like, what if you built a catapult to shoot you from Carolina to California?
I do like that. That's not a terrible idea, all things considered.
Bomb, 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 bomb. Moving along.
Please don't sue us, NPR.
NPR doesn't sue. They're friendly and nice.
That I doubt very much that they don't sue.
Nina Totenberg is a national treasure.
The ACLU is a national treasure, but all they do is sue. That's what they do.
That's a good point.
They're for suing.
They file lawsuits.
So anyway, see, now you've got me thinking, but I'm going to go space prison.
Okay, space prison.
Because that's what I said. So Tom and I saw this movie in the theater several years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't for the life of me remember what it was called.
I think
because
it was Lockdown.
We only ever referred to it as Space Prison. And it wasn't a good movie. We just wanted to see it because it was about a prison, wait for it, in space. So thematically, I'm intrigued by this, but I have no idea what to do mechanically. Because I feel like space prison is way too easy. Unless, maybe it's a space prison because this is post-attack on Earth. And the things that you're keeping, the creatures that you're keeping in the space prison are not human.
Mm.
They are whatever it is that attacked Earth. And they're some sort of ethereal space whale. Why not? I just wanted to say space whale. They don't have to be whales, but they're ethereal space creatures that survive in the vacuum of space. And so the prison is in space because we're not inhumane or in whale mane or whatever they are. And we're not killing them, but they need to be contained. So they're kept in some style of prison that maintains the vacuum of space, which now means the game is as much about keeping your personnel and robots and whatever things that have been designed on the surface of a planet alive and functioning in the vacuum of space, where these things are contained, but really in their element other than that.
Interesting.
And so I think this might be too simple, but to start, we'll say you have to man this prison, and maybe there's a series of prisons. Just trying to find a way to make it multiplayer without having to be cooperative. So there's a series of prisons. There's enough things that attacked that are still hanging around, and they're in these space station prisons in various orbits around the planet, maybe even in the solar system. But they have to contain these things, which, you know, live in the vacuum of space. They're in their element, and you're not. Excuse me. And you all start with the same sort of basic prison, and maybe the ones further out from Earth have less infrastructure to start with, but there's also a greater distance before they get to Earth. So there's a little bit of balancing in what starting position you choose. But then the game is about building your prison, and, you know, do I want this manned by ships? Do I want to pour my my resources into robots that patrol, or into actual personnel in spaceships or suits? Or do I want to really shore up the defenses that keep these things in? Do I want to keep the prison pretty simple, but invest in defensive positions along the orbits between my prison and Earth? And it's almost kind of tower defense-y, I think, in that it's pretty much understood that these horrible space monsters are going to escape. They're not great space prisons, and they're big, weird space monsters that we don't necessarily understand all that well. But at the end of probably a timer or a set, this would be fun in real time. I like it in real time. At the end of a timer, the prison who has allowed the least number of ethereal space whales to reach Earth to try to deal their post-space war damage is the winner.
Okay.
But with bonuses for things like, if you manage to, like, there can be bonuses for humane treatment of the space whales and for not allowing them out to then be killed by security patrols later, but rather actually maintaining what's there.
Sure.
So you may, depending on how you think your other players are going to do, decide, I'm going to go all out on armed defense and just say, when they get out, I'll kill them, and at least they won't make it to Earth, because it looks like that's the way everyone else is going. Or you may say, I'm going to try to keep them all in line in my space prison, but if they get out, I'm going to have to be dependent on someone else to make sure they don't make it to the planet.
Right. It's kind of neat. I'd play it.
You'd have to have some kind of way to share the load between, like, taking care of escaped space whales, so that, yeah, you could color code them, but you want to make it so that if I went full on containment and a space whale still gets out,
you know it's your fault.
Well, I know it's my fault, but also I don't just get screwed because everyone else with all the other space prisons just says, well, we know that's Tom's space whale because it's green. We're just going to let it destroy some of the planet because it's not going to reflect on us at all. It's only going to reflect on him. There has to be a little bit of shared responsibility among the space prison wardens. That's what I got.
I'd play that. You could have space Greenpeace, too, that occasionally blows up your prison to try to let them out.
Fantastic.
Just a random event card. Let's go. Oh, crap. They freaking...
Space Greenpeace.
Ah, crap. Yeah, no, that sounds really fun. I'd play that.
Well, That is Theme Ball, and we're very nearly, but not quite at the end of our episode. I'm going to put up a Twitter poll when this episode goes up.
Oh.
And you can vote on which one you liked better. You could also just tell us on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You could tell us on the internet at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You could tell us on the different part of the internet on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. You can rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play Music.
Or you can just slap the first person you see and they will tell us your message. Or be mad at you. One of those things.
Or maybe both.
See you next week.
Toodles.
Okay, bye.
Hi, everyone. Do you ever spill your beverages like the big, clumsy galumix that you are? Have you ever seen those other cups that use some sort of suction to secure themselves to the table, but not if you lift straight up so they're easy to drink from and really hard to spill? Do you ever look at them and think, man, I was going to solve that problem, but they beat me to the punch. But I already have all my money invested in R&D, so I'm riding this thing into the ground. Do you ever shout, I hope you're happy, you whore, at your hag of an ex-wife, Sheila, as she takes your dog and leaves you cold and alone because you, quote, piddled away everything on that stupid cup idea? Do you ever feel just so sad, so very, very sad all the time, like you took a wrong turn somewhere, but you don't know where it was, or even how you could find it, or even how to turn around, and now you're not even waiting for death, but just an empty shell, the shape of a man without content or meaning?
No. No, that all sounds pretty specific to you. Are you all right there, buddy?
I could really use a hug right now.
Sure, sure.
And that's my patented trick to get people to hug you.
Why, you got me.
And that's just one of the many techniques in my 3-part DVD course, Get People to Do Stuff They Don't Want to Do But You Want Them to Do It. All this and more can be yours for just 3 payments of $19.95 and 2 payments of $28.34. Call now. Operators are standing by.